Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslavsky. It's about to get warm and tingly with a dash of verbal cinnamon and cardamom, so I hope you're ready to connect. This is episode number 16. Welcome to a special edition of the Smart and Simple Matters show, everyone. I'm rolling solo today because I want to focus on a topic that needs my full concentration to communicate and wring out a heaping amount of value. But before I do that, I want to say thanks to Julie Van de Zand, who recently wrote a very nice review of this show on iTunes. In that review, Julie said that I always have great questions and tons of enthusiasm for my topics and the people I interview. She also gave me props on my curating resources. So thanks, Julie. I'm blushing a little bit right now. And thanks to everyone else who left a review of this show in iTunes recently. It makes a world of difference in who hears our message and how deeply that message sinks in. And one more quick note before I get to the topic at hand today. I want you to listen for the difference in this solo episode from my previous two solo episodes. Those are Smart and Simple Matters episode 5 about curating and Smart and Simple Matters episode number 9 about investing. Today, I'm going unscripted. The past two solo podcasts that I've done, I literally typed up every single word and read them off. It's a little bit embarrassing, but I'm willing to admit it. And I thought that those had a significant amount of polish to them, but might have come through in parts as a little bit mechanical. So today, all I got is an outline. And I'm really curious to know what you think the difference is and whether you like the fact that I am essentially going off script today and just working from an outline. Whether it's the clarity of my words or how much I ramble on, give me some feedback in the show notes if you would, please. And you can find those at valueofsimple.com/SASM016. All right, now for the topic at hand. I'm going to be talking about relationships. Relationships? Yeah, I really want to hammer home a few points, not just for you, but for me and for anyone who's listening about the value of relationships. And it feels really strange to have an entire episode dedicated to something that we all know, whether just inherently as humans, that we need for connection, for our health, for our happiness, for our survival, the thing that we call relationships. And I'd like to take it a little step further and talk about connecting. So as we start to get into this a little bit, I'll explain to you why, in more detail, we'll be talking about relationships today. Examples of some relationships that I've created and grown that have added a tremendous amount of value to my life and hopefully to the lives of the people that I've interacted with. I also want to talk about the topic of peer development, which is something that's near and dear to me, along with a number of other folks that I interact with online and off. I will also cover scheduling time in your calendar, whatever your calendar looks like, a Google calendar, a physical calendar that you carry with you, scheduling time for relationships, for growing new ones, and for the existing ones that are important to you. There was a specific request from Mohamed Tohami of Midway Simplicity. He wanted to know how to end negative relationships, which I have some experience with. So I'm going to talk about that too. And then I also want to talk to you about my relationship gurus, the people who have made an outsized impact on how I interact with the world, how I interact with you, how I interact with everybody around me. So we will talk about that a little bit, along with a couple of other miscellaneous items that come up. All right. So first off, why the topic of relationships? Well, I knew that I'd be doing this one at some point in time. This has been a highly requested topic in the comments on Value of Simple and in emails I've received. I'll give you a flavor of just a couple of things that people have asked me about and wanted to know more about. Aaron Currup, my friend from Remade by Hand, had a comment on my article called Invaluable Second Year Blogging Lessons. And she said, and I quote, "I don't know if you feel something like this would have a place on Value of Simple, but I would love to know more about how you nurture so many connections, keep in touch with such a wide and varied network, that sort of thing. I'm in awe of your ability to do so much along those lines when I can hardly keep up with a small circle." Well, I'm flattered, Aaron. Thank you for that. I don't know how much I can say, at least as far as generating awe. That's certainly not my intention, although it is my intention to create and to grow some pretty amazing relationships. So I'll comment on that too. Sally also sent me an email. She's a regular reader, and I frequently email back and forth with her. And she said, "Hi, Joel. One of the things that attracted me to your website is your experience with quitting the corporate world and starting your own business. Along those lines, I would find interesting and informative some tips regarding how to use technology to keep in social touch with other business professionals, both to expand your business and network, as well as replacement for the corporate office contacts. One of the things I'm fearful of is losing that personal contact with other professionals should I start my own business and leave corporate America." Well, Sally, as you know, I have experience with that in terms of quitting my corporate job back in March of 2012, and I'll comment on that one too. Thanks for the email. But you know what? There are other reasons why I want to talk about relationships today. One of those reasons is because I am a connector. I'm always looking to connect with other people and help connect them with each other. You know, the intensity of my connectorness, that's a made-up word, by the way, has increased tremendously since my personal renaissance began over 3 years ago. And I always had those urges before to connect with people, to form and to grow these relationships, these lifeline connections, as Keith Ferrazzi puts it in his book, Who's Got Your Back. I just didn't act on them. And I always wanted to. But now the difference is those urges, I actually intentionally have a plan in place to act upon them. And this fact that I'm a connector and that I see so many other people who are connectors and the value that they bring to people's lives, I'm always interested in the topic of relationships to see how you connect other people to each other, how you connect people to the resources that they need. It's just something that's inside of me, and now it's something that is outside of me that I have to do. It's just part of me and part of a deep urge that I fulfill every single day. And I don't know how this is, but somehow I've woven this rich tapestry of friends since I started my personal renaissance. A number of them are folks that I met individually online, whether it was through blogs, whether it was through a number of online communities that I'm a part of, the Bootstrapper Guild, the Putty Tribe, A-List Blogging Boot Camps, and soon to be, which I'm incredibly excited about, Scott Dinsmore, How to Connect with Anyone community. It's just amazing, and I'm in awe, if I can use that word again, not of myself, but in terms of how fortunate I've fallen into some of these relationships and how reciprocal a lot of these people are and how genuine and how generous they are in terms of engaging me. It's a wonderful thing. One of the other reasons, too, that I want to talk about relationships is I strongly, strongly believe that there is no better path to self-awareness than interacting with more people who have diverse thoughts and philosophies and principles and experiences, some of which you have overlap. Colin Wright was talking about in episode number 8 about how we're 99% similar, regardless of what religion or political or ethnic group we belong to, and I believe that too. But when you get that diversity of thought and background and you expose yourself to all of these different people and the different ways that they think and feel and act, it just creates self-awareness in you, what you could be, what you could change about yourself. And that self-awareness is so huge, and it's a fundamental aspect of me and a huge reason why relationships can play as big of a role in our lives as they do. And the last thing that I want to talk about in terms of relationships before we start to get into some examples and peer development and the other topics today, relationships are important to the people who are important to me. And not just the folks that I know or that you have already heard of. I'll mention Scott Dinsmore again and his insight about relationships in Smart and Simple Matters episode 12, or the upcoming episode number 17 after this one that I recorded with James Clear. I can't wait to share it with you. And James has some amazing comments about relationships, what they've done for him, what they will continue to do for him, and basically unlocking all the success that he's had in his life. So those are the main reasons why I want to talk about relationships today before we transition into the relationships that I've grown and some of the other topics. So let's do that. Let's talk about some of the spontaneous or some of the intentional relationships that I found myself in, why I got myself into that position, and what they've done for me. First up, I want to talk about my buddy Booba, who is a friend of mine that I met through a, I won't call, shared love, but I love Trader Joe's. Love Trader Joe's. And there's one that's relatively close to my house, and my buddy Booba worked and still continues to work at Trader Joe's on the weekends. Every Saturday morning, which was my ritual and still is my ritual, I would go to Trader Joe's and I would see this friendly guy who was unpacking bananas or just generally doing various things around the grocery store. And one day we started talking about kids. I had Grant, who at that time was about 1 year old, with me on the grocery trip, and Booba smiled and he asked me how old he was, and we started talking about our kids and his kids. It was just a couple minute conversation, nothing to really hang your hat on, and we both went on our merry way. And then the next week I saw him again, and we were friendly enough that we started chatting for 2 minutes again, and we talked about another slice of life. And then going forward over the course of 3 or 4 months, we realized that we really enjoyed talking to each other. We came from very different backgrounds. Booba is from Africa, and he is an amazing person with an amazing story. I won't get into it here. But upon the surface, it didn't look like this would be the kind of fertile ground for us to form a relationship and ultimately a friendship, but it was. And it was only because both he and I were open to smiling and chatting. And the wonderful relationship that's come out of simply saying hi to a guy who worked at Trader Joe's and then forming a relationship and then ultimately a friendship has been incredibly rewarding with me. You know, along those lines, and this one might sound a little bit strange, but I have an uncle. His name is Steve. We have always been friendly. He's my uncle, after all, and he's a great man. I've really respected him and trusted him for a number of reasons. But just within the last 1 to 2 years, maybe it's because of the point in his life where he is. He recently retired from his long sales job of 30 plus years, where he finds himself in terms of needing some of my help, talking about personal finance and investing. But we have grown a lot closer because I've been open to exploring a new side, a fresh look into a man that I've known for 33 years and I've interacted with, but there's so much more to him than I ever knew, all because I had the openness to talk to him about politics, which we firmly disagree on in a very vigorous but respectful way, and talked about some of the things, some of the approaches to life, which we differ sometimes strongly on, but that's brought us together because we are open enough and we allow ourselves to be vulnerable and candid enough to discuss these things and not to get fired up, not to think that anyone is attacking anyone else or that we're trying to convince each other that we know the right way or that we think the right way. It's brought about a brand new relationship with my Uncle Steve, which has just been absolutely wonderful. And shifting a little bit too in terms of online relationships, you know, Booba and my Uncle Steve are people who I've known or have met in person. But a lot of the relationships that I've created and cultivated and found myself enriched by are ones that I've developed online over the past, say, 2 or 3 years. You might know this first guy that I'm talking about. His name is Tyler Tervorin, and he is the founder of a website called Advanced Riskology. Also the founder of the membership community called the Bootstrapper Guild, which I'm a member of. Tyler and I won't say that we hit it off. I've been following his work for about 3 years now and commenting regularly on his website, Advanced Riskology. He's published some amazing articles about entrepreneurship, about taking the kinds of risks that at first seem like they're ridiculous, but when you look upon them, you think, how can I not take this kind of risk? He has provided me with mentorship. Not officially. I've never said, hey, Tyler, would you like to be my mentor? But when it comes to online business and entrepreneurship and just getting my bearings when it comes to engaging people in the online world, Tyler has been there for me. He has guided me and he's become a friend. And it's a great thing. We really enjoy each other's company. We chat on Skype from time to time and just generally really, really express ourselves well together and feed off each other. And I feel like I have at least as much to give back to him as he does to me when it comes to an insider look into his platforms and what he's trying to do, and be able to give him the kind of trusted insight that he relies on for people to help steer him in a direction that he's looking to go. Another guy is a man named Amit Amin. You may know him as well. He is on a website called Happier Human, and he was in a couple of communities, or still is, that I belong to, A-List Blogging Bootcamps and the Putty Tribe. He has been a beta tester for Start Investing with $100. He also has beta tested an upcoming product that I have. If you're listening to this in the future, it will have already launched. It's called the Digital Launch Playbook. And just a funny dude, a funny, funny guy who is deeply involved in the science of happiness and in motivation, and has influenced me with his articles that he's written on Happier Human. We've developed a correspondence over email, through blog comments, and a number of other ways. And he has been, I would even go so far as to say, instrumental into a number of the things that I've done and the kinds of thoughts that I've had, especially over the past year, on how I pursue relationships, how I think about happiness and what brings happiness to my life, and the role that connecting plays in generating and maintaining that level of happiness that I feel like I have every single day when I wake up. Now, I don't want you thinking that after I'm talking about all these men, Booba and Uncle Steve and Tyler and Amit, that you think I just hang out with guys all day long, with the exception of interacting with my wife, Melinda. That's definitely not the case, as most of my best friends are normally women and have been women over the past 15 years of my life. And I would say that I have more women in my life with a huge impact than I do men. So it certainly falls on different sides of the gender spectrum. One other thing that I want to talk about, and this isn't a lecture, I'm not trying to tell you the right way to do it. The way that I approach relationships and the way that I engage people offline and online isn't a template that somebody should copy. There are other great ways in which to be very intentional and to create a rich assortment of relationships in your life. But I do want to talk about communities, whether it's your local community, or at least in my aspect and the way that I'm going to talk about it today, I'm going to talk about online communities. One that I've already referenced a couple of times, which is the Putty Tribe. Emily Wapnick, who is the founder of the Putty Tribe and also the founder of Putty Like, which is an awesome, awesome blog that I follow religiously. I wrote a guest post for her when she invited me to do it called How You Get the Putty-Like Snowball Effect. And I recapped in a story how one simple act of clicking on a link from one blog to another that got me to Putty-Like, and realizing that Emily and her multi-potential nature and the way that she communicates that you don't have to pick a thing. You don't have to be a certain type of person. You can have an overarching theme to your life, to your business, kind of like I do with Value of Simple. You know, I'm not just about simplicity. I'm not just about organization or personal finance or uncovering the deep motivations in terms of why we do the things we do and why they're important to us. That article was detailing how I went from a blog commenter to winning a comment contest to get into her membership community, the Putty Tribe, to being very interactive on the forums, getting noticed by a few folks who ultimately formed the Lifeline group that I'm in right now, who we meet every 2 weeks on Tuesdays normally for 2 hours, and we talk about what we need to do, how we can develop each other and support each other to achieve some of our biggest goals in life. It was only possible because I clicked that link and because I allowed a snowball effect of actions that I was mostly in control of to determine where I went and who I interacted with online. The Putty Tribe has been, as I've said, instrumental in my ability to reach out and to get feedback, to help other people, to see what being a multi-potentialite means to other folks, and how I might incorporate some of those really cool, untraditional, non-traditional, I should say, aspects into my own business and my own life. And something that's a little bit more traditional is Toastmasters. Some of you may not have heard of Toastmasters before, but it's an international organization that a lot of people think of as just related to public speaking, which I'm insanely excited about. And I hope my public speaking career launches this year and then continues to build momentum going into 2014. I have some pretty cool ideas on how to make that happen. If you do as well, contact me and make sure you let me know. But I joined Toastmasters in April of last year, and the type of people who were in there, my 87-year-old buddy Sal, who I've written a post about on Value of Simple about how to simplify life by dying. It's a great read if you haven't checked it out yet. The ability to join that community, to know that those are my right people, to find the right club after trying out two other clubs that just simply didn't work for me, and being able to settle into that one for leadership skills, for presentation skills, for communication skills, being able to go more than two sentences without saying or ah, although it might not sound like it right now, being able to be a lot more concise in my words and forming thoughts better in my head so that I communicate with more clarity and more brevity. Toastmasters has been instrumental, and I consider that a community. It's not just my club. There's this whole hierarchy going up to the national and international level of resources that people have access to when they join a community like Toastmasters. And there's so many unexpected and unintended benefits of the Putty Tribe and Toastmasters and all of these communities that I've become a part of. If you're not involved in local communities or online communities, and you find that there's not a hole in your life, but there's a gap in terms of the richness that you feel when you engage with people, introvert, extrovert, doesn't matter, I would strongly recommend that you find communities that have your right people in them and then engage deeply and openly and genuinely with everybody there. And I don't mention all these people and communities to preach. I am genuinely grateful, and I would love it if you expressed gratitude as well for the amazing relationships in your life and the amazing relationships that are waiting for you, that are waiting for me, just because you put yourself out there. Just because you allow yourself to be generous and candid and vulnerable and accountable to all of the various people who you surround yourself with and want to surround yourself with. All of these people that I've just talked about, all the meaning that they've created in my life is because I am willing to give back, to make a meaningful connection in other people's and other communities' lives. And that gets into the topic of peer development. Yeah, I have a friend, Denise Urena, who is online, and she has a blog, or did, that I hope she revives, called Peer Mindset. She and I see eye to eye when it comes to not self-development, but peer development, and how you can have success and how you can, quote, win in life by developing other people and by developing your peers. I have a very liberal interpretation of who my peer is. It could be people who make seven figures a year. It could be somebody who is not successful, at least in the way that you traditionally define it. It doesn't matter. I am very interested in developing my peers, basically any other human being that's out there who wants my help, who I could help. They are my peer. We're all human, and we can all interact with each other as humans, regardless of how high of a pedestal other people in society have put you on. And there's two aspects to peer development. And there's active and there's passive. Some examples, at least, in terms of active peer development. So I would go to someone's website. I may have only interacted with them once or twice online. And I will turn on my microphone. I will give them the verbal play-by-play of my experience on their website, what it looks like, what it feels like to me, what I think they can improve, what I think they do tremendously well. I won't sugarcoat it. I'll just give them my genuine feelings and analysis. Sometimes it's solicited, not directly to me, but in an online forum. Other times it's not. I have found that when you do that, when you take an active interest in somebody, especially when they're not expecting it, and you give them the kind of insight in genuine terms and in giving terms, and you make them understand that you're not being critical of them, even if you say something constructive, they appreciate that, more than just about anything else in the world. To be able to develop that for somebody and develop someone else by giving them your insight, solicited or unsolicited, is a wonderful thing. You, of course, need to be careful about unsolicited peer development. There are a number of people out there who simply don't want your help, and you need to acknowledge that, and you need to be ready for that. You need to be ready for people to push back and say, look, this is all well and good, man, but leave me frickin' alone. I don't need your help. I don't want your engagement. That will happen from time to time. It happens for me from time to time. But being active in my peer development and not just waiting for somebody to wave a white flag and surrender to the world and say, please help me, going out there and trying to help the people who may not even say that they need it, but doing it anyway, because that's part of who you are. The other example of peer development, at least the other side of it, is reactive, where it's accepting a request from a stranger or an acquaintance to meet for a beverage, to talk about whatever comes up. Whether you talk business or not, there are tons of different ways to develop your peer mindset and skill set without explicitly helping somebody. Sometimes just allowing somebody to talk through something that they're struggling with, a pain that they have with you, even if you don't think that you're doing anything to help them and develop them, by giving them a forum to engage you and to listen deeply without interrupting and take that genuine interest in them and what it is that they're doing and what they're trying to achieve in life, that reactive peer development is huge. So when somebody emails you and says, hey, I could use a hand with this little thing, or hey, I've got this new product coming up, would you like to beta test it with me and for me? Say yes. You don't always have to say yes to everything. We need to get really good at saying no in life, actually. Otherwise, we can easily get overwhelmed, especially for people who try to practice a minimalist state of life like I do. But saying yes is an amazing thing, and being open to reactive peer development. When somebody seeks you out, when they want your counsel, your wisdom, for whatever reason it is, give it to them. Give it to them as often as you can and as frequently as you can without sacrificing your own top priorities and your ability to create the kind of value that only you can uniquely create in life. This kind of lends itself into, well, how do I do that? That's all well and good, but how much time do I spend on it? I don't have all freaking day to develop other people. I need to work on my own stuff. I need to raise my own children. I need to go to my own job. I need to focus on myself. Otherwise, if I don't focus on myself and my own health and my own happiness, how am I going to be of use to anyone else? And that is a good point, if I do say so myself. I'm crediting that point to you, not to me. I'm giving you the full credit on this one. So let's talk about scheduling time for relationships, not just peer development, but for relationships as a whole, personal or business, any other kind of relationships that you have. You can and should, I would say, be scheduling time in your calendar for relationships. Now, I'm going to tell you how I do it, how I schedule time. It's not the right way. It might not be the best way for you, but giving you an example might give you a template to build off and to customize to create your own way of scheduling time in your calendar for relationships and being very intentional about it, being very organized about it. These are things that are incredibly helpful to me and might be helpful to you in terms of how you schedule that time for relationships. Here's a little secret that I'm going to let you in on. I have a spreadsheet, that's not the secret, of 81 reoccurring business tasks that I should or could be doing at some point on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, monthly, annually, and most of them are relationship related. Now that might sound crazy. How can you focus so much of your effort in terms of the time that you spend on relationships and not creating content and not doing a whole bunch of other things that are core to my mission and the kind of value that I generate in the world? I would say it's because I recognize their importance and the fact that I get nowhere in life and in business without the connectedness and without the help of everybody else who is enabling and empowering my ability to spread my message and my mission with everybody else. So out of those 81 reoccurring business tasks, I have 15 minutes every day where I schedule it in my calendar, and that's sacred. I do this every single day. I selflessly promote other people's stuff. whether it's an article that somebody wrote online, whether it's a friend who needs to have a pick-me-up and I can communicate something over Google Plus or Facebook. It's not just with business. I mix the business side and the life side, the personal side, when it comes to 15 minutes every day where I selflessly promote other people and the awesomeness that they're bringing into the world in one way or another. I also have 90 minutes every week that I schedule for peer development. 90 minutes for peer development every week. Again, sacred. I have to do that. That is just as important as creating this episode of Smart and Simple Matters or anything else that I do. Part of it is for reactive peer development. Part of it is for active peer development. And that can change from week to week, but I always commit to those 90 minutes. And then I have my 30 minutes every week on Friday afternoon where I express gratitude and I convey thanks, sometimes crudely, sometimes eloquently, to the people who helped me or who mean something to me, even for the littlest thing that they've done or that they will be doing for me. Being able to reach out to people via text, via email, a quick phone call, a little Skype session, and being able to express gratitude to them, telling them, I love you, and here's why, or I respect you, or thank you for doing what you just did for me or are going to be doing to me. Having those 30 minutes and basically ending my work week every Friday afternoon and expressing gratitude, scheduling that time to reward the people in the relationships that I value is a gift that I give to others and that they give back to me in a number of ways that I can't even express. You know, there's other times in terms of scheduling it in the calendar. I have time that's scheduled for video conversations, mostly on Skype, sometimes on Google Plus Hangouts with new and existing connections, business specifically. And then I also have time where I generally reach out and try to schedule conversations, whether it's on my cell phone or whether it's on Skype, for new and existing connections, both business and personal. These are in my calendar. I plan my day, my week, and everything that's important to me around these relationship blocks of time. Sometimes they slide a little bit. That's life gets in the way, and you can't always be perfect in terms of your plan and your organization and doing it the exact way that you want. But the fact that I have it scheduled in my calendar and that I view these things as just as deep a commitment that I cannot break as anything else that I do has helped me tremendously and really allowed me to up my game and to level up, if you will, a number of the relationships that I have created and that I continue to grow and feel very fortunate that are blossoming in front of me. I'll be honest though, sometimes it's not easy to have time for always seeking out new relationships and always maintaining the relationships that have value for you. But whether you think you have time or not, you probably do. I started being able to do more outreach and grow more and richer relationships when I quit video games, when I quit my addiction to video games about 3 years ago, right before my personal renaissance began, when I realized I cannot be a good father and be addicted to video games. It's a choice, either continue to play or be a good father to my son, Grant. I made that choice. And now I have so much more time for him as a result of it. I don't stay up until 3 a.m. on a work day playing World of Warcraft anymore. And that has opened up so much more time for everything, but especially relationships, because I've been able to reallocate it and get more sleep, by the way. Quitting your addictions, or even working on breaking them, and I'm not going to tell you how to do that. I'm not going to tell you which ones. You probably know at least which ones, and I am not an expert. I am not qualified to tell people how to break their addictions. But the fact that I've been able to break my sugar addiction as well, or anything else that consumes your mind, where you have laser-focused thoughts about, I need to play video games, I need to eat some sugar, things that don't add value to your life or to anyone else, when you stop those, when you break those addictions, you have so much more time for relationships and for pouring your energy, your physical, mental, emotional, spiritual energy into the relationships that do bring value, that do bring meaning into your life. I'll say one more thing, and a lot of people don't have this opportunity. A lot of people don't find themselves in the unbelievable fortunate position that I found myself in last year when I quit my corporate job, that often it sucked the time and energy out of me and my ability to be intentional about which people I interact with, which relationships were most valuable to me, and how much time I spent on certain relationships. When I quit my corporate job, it was now solely up to me. I got to choose who I worked with, when I worked with them, if I worked with them. And I don't know if you'll ever have the opportunity to do this. And even if you can't do it from a professional perspective, at least from a personal perspective, whether it's in your church, your synagogue, your mosque, any place that you find yourself feeling that you need to be intentional about the folks that you interact with. Realize that the relationships that you grow do not need to be forced upon you by social norms, by your parents who ask you to befriend or engage somebody as a favor to them, by a friend of yours who wants to connect you with the wrong crowd. You have the ability to choose which relationships you get into, which relationships you get out of, and which relationships you spend most of your time on. So these are all great ways to have more time for your relationships, is to stop your addictions, the things that prevent you from creating and engaging fully in relationships, or to quit, whether it's your job or whether it's a social expectation of you, religious, political, whatever. These are great ways to have more time for relationships. You know what I just realized? This has been a seriously serious conversation that I've just been having with you and that I've been having with myself. And relationships don't always need to be serious. You don't have to take a serious approach to them all the time. They should be spontaneous. They should be fun. They should be goofy. They should be quirky, like you are, like I am. And with that in mind, I want to tell you some ways that you could, or that I do, put on your, as I like to call it, I want to be your friend sign. There are a number of different ways that I signal to people that I want to be your friend. I want to create a meaningful relationship with you. Not every single person in the world, but maybe you specifically. Maybe the person who's listening here and you want to interact with me in some way. Consider this my I want to be your friend sign that I'm putting out. One of the primary ways that I do that is my personal user guide. For people who are part of the Refuge of Simplicity and who are on the Value of Simple newsletter, they have access to the template that I use for my own personal user guide, which you can always access on Value of Simple. This shows that I have nothing to hide. By giving everybody this 10-minute window into something that would otherwise take you years to know and learn about me, you learn about my belief systems. When I wake up in the morning, how I want people to interact with me, how I deal with the status quo and social norms, I have nothing to hide. And I want to be generous with the knowledge of who I am, generous of the wisdom that I have for other people, even with strangers. And that is one of the ways that I put out my I want to be your friend sign, by having a personal user guide, by giving other people access to have their own personal user guides so that we can know more about each other, so we can understand what makes us tick, and we can accelerate the process of getting past all the awkward small talk. Let's get directly into the deep stuff, the fun stuff that we all love to talk about and engage about when we're forming or engaging in the relationships that are important to us. Another way that this manifests itself is my guest post guidelines. For any of you who have ever thought about writing a guest post on Value of Simple, I have some ridiculous, ridiculous guest post guidelines. They're probably about 3,500 words long, and they cover just about anything that you could ever imagine when it comes to writing a guest post on someone else's website. But I show people that I want them to engage me, that I want to be their friend, by giving them the guidelines, telling them what my expectations are for myself and for them, the fact that this should be fun, that what they're doing should be valuable to the people on Value of Simple, and that they should not approach it as a what's in it for me. They should approach it as, here is something, here's value that I created for you, the community at Value of Simple, that I give away freely because I want to help you in some way. That's the way that I engage other people. And when folks join me on a platform and a community that I'm building, I tell them, I want to engage you. I want to be your friend. And here are some of the great ways that you can do that and you can help other people. You know, I'll tell you one more quick story before I talk about a couple other ways that I want to be your friend. Asking a question during the question and answer section of a presentation at an event that you attend, it doesn't need to be business related. It can certainly be personal, your book club, whatever it is a great way to tell somebody, I'm interested in you. I am interested in being your friend. You know, I got an invite from Dan Coe, who's the chief of staff for Arianna Huffington at the Huffington Post. Last month in January of 2013, I was at New Media Expo, and Dan was giving a presentation about how the Huffington Post was creating social good and promoting certain events and certain challenges for people to get the economy going again. And I asked him a question during the Q&A session of it, which was, at least he felt, insightful and a very valid one. And then also followed up by chatting with him for a few minutes after the presentation. It was that interaction, me being friendly to him and then him reciprocating, that got me an invite to be a contributor on the Huffington Post. I'm really grateful for that. And it was all because I asked a question that was not in my self-interest. I really wanted to get Dan's input on how the Huffington Post was engaging the blogging community on creating things in a medium other than text, in audio and video infographics. That was a wonderful thing, only because I put out my sign by asking a question and saying, Dan, what are you doing about this? I would like to help. How can I do that? And then the fact that we struck up a little bit of a relationship and that I now get to contribute on the Huffington Post as a result of that simple question that I asked him. I want to digress for a little bit because there's a few other things that I want to hit at it. I'm already looking at the watch and holy smokes, I've been talking for a while. This is what happens when I go unscripted. Mental note for next time, I tell you. If you haven't read Keith Ferrazzi's Never Eat Alone and Who's Got Your Back, as well as Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, do it. Scott Dinsmore was the one who originally got me interested in Keith Ferrazzi. And of course, Dale Carnegie is known all over the world as an expert in relationships and in forming them and in influencing people, but in an altruistic way, in a way that helps them, not that necessarily helps you. I would say read those books. They may freak you out and just fundamentally alter your mindset of how you interact with people, how you think about connecting, how you think about friendships, what the meaning of a friendship is, what the meaning of a relationship is. Those are three awesome resources that I would recommend to everybody. Even if you've read them, read them again. And again, these are the kinds of things that you can read every year to solidify in your mind what you can do for other people, how you can be their friend, and how you can better put out your I want to be your friend sign. If you don't do that, or even if you do that, another great way is you can coordinate reoccurring chats with people daily, weekly, monthly, every once in a while, every decade. It doesn't matter. Take the initiative. Show someone how important they are to you and that you want to commit to engaging them on a regular, scheduled basis, and then actually do it. You would be amazed that when the default in life is you engage and you interact with somebody, as opposed to the default being we only interact if one of us thinks about it, or if one of us isn't insanely busy with the busyness of life, being able to coordinate those reoccurring chats with the people who are important with you will help you grow and will help you form more value in your existing relationships. It's an amazing thing. I do it. I love it. I recommend everybody do it too. But you need to have systems in place. You need to have scalable systems to do all these things, to be able to ask questions, to be able to have the time to read books, to coordinate reoccurring chats. The systems talk is something for another time. I've talked about my calendar system a little bit and how I schedule time. Make sure that you have a scalable system in place, that as your relationships grow, as they take up more of your time and your energy, and you're okay with that, you need to have systems in place to manage all of that. I'll talk about that some other time, but it does also help you track the depth and the frequency of interaction with people. Do you not know the last time that you called your best friend, or that you sent an email to your sister or brother or mom or dad or son or daughter? If you have systems in place and you can track these things, not for the nitty-gritty, but just being able to have some kind of framework in place where you understand who needs you to reach out to them and how often and how deeply, those are always wonderful things to have. I want to turn my attention for a moment to a couple of reader submissions and listener submissions. I mentioned Tohami from Midway Simplicity earlier, and he responded to a tweet in preparation for this episode where I was asking for topics that I should cover, and he asked me to cover, and I quote, how to end negative relationships when you are a sensitive person who always avoids confrontation. It's a great and often befuddling issue, and I can't claim to be an expert on it and to know everything about it, but I do have a lot of experience in ending relationships, some of them negative, others which are benign, but just aren't contributing to me or to the other person involved in them in some ways. The tough part is when you are a sensitive person. I think of myself as a sensitive person in a number of ways, although it has gotten a lot easier and a lot quicker to sever the relationships in my life that don't allow me to be intentional and that hold me back in some way from the other people who need me more or who want me more. So, Tohami, I would say to your question about how to end negative relationships, you and everyone else who is in one needs to realize some of them are toxic. Some of them, although you can't physically see it, if you were to be able to get inside your head and your brain and look at the pollution that these relationships, these negative relationships are creating, how they're impacting your focus, how they're impacting your productivity, how they're impacting your ability to be meaningful and engaged with the other people who you do want to interact with, who you do love, who you do respect. Understanding how much those things hold you back, even if you have raw feelings about them, even if you're scared of confrontation, you can do it subtly. You can just let them hopefully fade away into obscurity. Or every once in a while, we need to publicly state to that person, I'm breaking up with you as a friend. It's tough to do. I haven't had to do that very often, but sometimes you need to do that as well. I don't know how much this helps, but I realized a long time ago and recently started acting on all of these toxic relationships, all these negative relationships, regardless of how long they've been. Historically, being friends with somebody or knowing somebody is not a good enough reason to continue to have a relationship with them. Once I was able to get that thought pounded into me, then it became a lot easier to deal with the emotions that I had and the sensitivity that I had around severing these relationships with people who just weren't doing anything good for me and that I wasn't doing anything good for them. I also want to hit on Sally's question. I mentioned her at the top of the show. Sally was asking about using technology to keep in touch with former friends and colleagues when you leave your company job. She may someday, and I already have. I guess I would approach that in a couple of different ways, Sally. Even before you leave, send an email or the equivalent of an email if you're a face-to-face person, a couple of weeks ahead of time when you know that you're no longer going to be there, to the people that you see yourself interacting with after leaving. Let them know why it is that you're leaving, where it is that you're going, and how they can track you down, whether it's in person or on the internet. I did that, and I got a lot of goodwill of not being the guy who just simply vanishes from the workplace someday, and everyone's left thinking, huh, where'd that Joel guy go? He was kind of cool. I would have liked to continue a relationship with him, but I don't know why he left, and I don't know how to get a hold of him, so I guess I'll never think about him again. That's unfortunate when that happens, and I saw that happen really frequently to people who I wanted to continue to have a relationship with, but gave me no outlet, no avenue to be able to continue to engage them after they left the company that I was working with. So the plan starts even before, and using that technology, social media or email, to engage the folks before you leave. And after you leave, being able to schedule emails, put it on your calendar. Every other month, you basically send an email to the former coworkers or friends that you want to keep in touch with, and you give them the update. You tell them how your son is doing. You attach a picture to that email, because everybody always loves pictures of two-year-old little boys, especially cute ones like my kid. Although he's not cuter than anyone else's. I just think he's awesome because, hey, He's my kid, and I'm supposed to think he's awesome. So schedule those emails to a select group of people, and you'll notice that that select group of people continues to whittle down. That once you leave your company, your workplace, large corporation or small, some people are going to forget about you. Your value to them will evaporate because you're not physically there or you're not engaged with them every single day. That's the way that it works. And if you come into it with that expectation, you can focus on the folks who do want to engage you, who do want to continue to be your friend, who do want to continue to react to the events in your life, and that you can also be something useful to them as well. LinkedIn, when you're talking about technology, is also great too. Connect with people, preferably before you leave, but even after the fact. You'd be amazed at some of the things that people share on LinkedIn, whether it's personal or professional, and how easy it is to continue to interact with some of your former friends and colleagues from the workplace when you leave your company job. I'm not a huge user of LinkedIn, but I realize that for a lot of folks, it can be a gateway into the brains and into the activities of the folks who you left behind when you made that choice to leave and do something different. So those are some of the strategies that I use. Maybe they'd be useful for you or for the other folks who may find themselves in the position of leaving their job to pursue the life of an entrepreneur, a small business owner, whatever it is that you do. Okay, now before I finish, I cannot talk about relationships without talking about my relationship gurus. There are a lot of them, and they have been very different over the course of my life. I'm going to talk about my existing ones because it would take far too long to talk about the rich history of relationship gurus that I've had. One of the consistent ones that have been there since the beginning, since literally day one, is my mom. And the fact that my mom has shown me through her smile, through the way that she interacts with people, through the way that she helps people and the approach that she takes, being a giver and not a taker, I had that exhibited for me every single day from day one, and that's made a huge impact on me. So I would definitely consider my mom a relationship guru, and I feel very fortunate and grateful that I have so many other family members who are role models when it comes to relationships. It's an amazing thing to have. And when I don't have family members to provide that for me, I rely on other people too. I rely on folks like Keith Ferrazzi, who I've mentioned already. I've never met Keith. I've never interacted with Keith other than a few tweets. I'd love to someday. I'd love to be Keith's friend. But he has been a guru to me, whether he knows it or not, through his books, Never Eat Alone and Who's Got Your Back. Amazing resources. I cannot recommend them highly enough. And they have been, and I don't say this lightly, transformational in terms of how I interact with the world and how I think about connecting and relationships. Along a similar lines, Scott Dinsmore of liveyourlegend.net has been great when it comes to relationships. He was the one who introduced me through his book review to Keith Ferrazzi, and I owe him a lot for introducing me to concepts of how you engage people the right way. And I do right way in quotes because in reality, there really is no right way. There are lots of wrong ways to get into relationships with people, to take a stance of, I want to extract something from you. You look at a guy like Scott and you look at how much he wants to give with no expectation of getting anything back in return. And it's amazing. It's inspiring. It's motivating. And he is one of my relationship gurus as well. One more that I want to call out, and I'm sorry, there are too many others to mention individually. So if you're listening and you feel left out, know that you probably are very important in terms of how I view the world and how I think about relationships. But I did want to comment on one of my best friends, Erica. She's been one of my best friends since high school for more than half my life now. And when it comes to thinking about how do you interact with people in a real way, she is the one who taught me that it is okay to say I love you to somebody other than a family member, and that is so powerful. This is a topic for another time, but we don't tell our friends and the folks that we love, that we love them. I don't know why. We should start conversations not with, hey, how's it going, but with, I love you, instead of saving I love you until the very end when we're bidding someone goodbye. Erica taught me what it was to be able to love someone other than a family member and to be able to express that. And I'm forever grateful for that. So I'll only say one more thing. You know, I'm have a draft of an article on Value of Simple that I'll write up and I'll publish someday. I have it tentatively called Why I Intentionally Hold Myself Back from Getting to the Top. And it reflects upon a time where I was reading an A-list blogger's post and I thought that I should really contact that person and see how I can help them. You know, maybe I could get in good with them. Maybe I could develop a relationship with him so that he'd like to help me someday. And maybe I could skip a couple of branches on my climb to the top. I opened up Gmail to send him an email and then I thought maybe instead of spending these 20 minutes crafting the perfect email, which he probably isn't even going to read or act on, I could use 10 of those minutes to develop myself in some way and 10 of those minutes to develop my peers in some way. You know, when I became an entrepreneur, I resolved not to ride anyone else's coattails to success. And that's not to say that I don't value my relationship with some A-listers out there. I do, even as I rest very comfortably on the C-list right now. I'm all about letting others help me climb. And I know that I need other people to climb to where I want to be. But I spent those next 20 minutes developing myself and developing other, quote, C-listers who are my friends, the people I respect, the random strangers that need a hand, that I work so hard so that other people can ride my coattails. My coattails aren't very long right now, but I would like to, and with your help, and the message that we're creating here in the community that we're building, I would love for people to be able to ride my coattails to success, whatever that looks like to them. And I'm always looking to get a bigger coat with more tails so that people can hang on to them and that I can do more peer development. What that means is that I'd rather hold myself back from financial success and intentionally limit the speed of my ascent because I don't want to be at the top. I never did my corporate job. I've never done in the volunteer work that I've done. I generally don't want to compete with anyone. I want to reach down or to the side and give a boost to people climbing up the same trees that I'm trying to climb. And every once in a while, being okay with reaching up to have somebody else lift me to the next branch. So don't chase after people who can help spread your message to 10,000 other people when you can support 10 people in meaningful ways and maybe those 10 people will spread your message to 1,000 other people. The impact to you is the same, but your impact to everybody else is exponentially bigger. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode about relationships, why the topic of relationships, examples of relationships that I've created and grown, and how you might do the same or do it better or do it differently than me. The importance that peer development has for me and for my view on connecting to other people in deep and meaningful ways. Scheduling time in your calendar for relationships. Insanely important. Do it. You will be amazed at how much you benefit and that everyone else benefits by scheduling time in your calendar and view that time as sacred. View that as deep as a commitment as any other commitment that you make when you schedule time in your calendar for creating and for growing the existing relationships that you have. You know, thanks again for the inspiration to Aaron and to Sally for getting me to do this, for Tohami for the request of answering about negative relationships and how you get yourself out of them. We can't just add relationships like anything else without periodically assessing what's valuable and what we should be intentional about. And thanks again to my relationship gurus, to my mom, to Keith Ferrazzi, to Scott Dinsmore, to my friend Erica, and to so many other people who I don't have time to mention. You are all amazing to me in different ways, and I would be nowhere in my ability to interact with the world without you. So to wrap this up, if you're an introvert, if you're an extrovert, if you're an ambivert, that's a Dan Pink phrase, I believe, go make some more friends. See everyone as your peer. And realize that nobody is too good or too successful for you to engage on a human level. We all want to be engaged as humans, and everybody is approachable. Everybody wants connection, and sometimes people are just waiting for you to do that for them. I also want to make a quick shout out to my friend Ram Dev and some other folks like Todd Tresseter and James Clear. they have helped me develop an abundance mindset. And that's exhibited in an article I wrote for Value of Simple called Why You Can't Steal My Thunder and How to Create an Unlimited Supply. Realizing that relationships aren't a zero-sum game, that it's not about how much you can give or how much you can take, that you should approach them through abundance, that it's a gift. It's magnificent when you can join someone new in their journey in life and be able to tell stories to each other and know that there's an almost unlimited amount that you can give to each other, and adopting that abundance mindset is so important. Well, I think I covered a lot of ground today, but I'm sure I neglected to talk about a lot of the things that are important to you that you wanted to hear about when it comes to connecting into relationships. What did I cover that you want me to clarify or maybe expand upon in more depth in a blog post or in a follow-up to this episode of Smart and Simple Matters? Leave a comment in the show notes and let me know. I want to know. I want to address it. I want to continue the conversation with you in another place. You can get the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM016. I do want to say thanks for everybody for listening. For those of you who are going to be doing the Continuous Creation Challenge with me coming up in April and the resources that I'm going to be creating for it, and also anybody who helps me with the project that I have coming up called the Digital Launch Playbook, which is coming out at the end of March 2013, you help me be successful. I want to help you be successful through these things that I create. And I really thank you for listening. I do this for you, and I'm thrilled with the feedback I get about how this show is shaping your mindset and actions, but it's nothing without you, without your ears, without your actions, and I just want to say thank you. It's time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of all things Value of Simple.